You're listening to the AHTB Cereals and Oilseeds podcast. Monthly highlights from your arable levy organisation.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the AHTB Cereals and Oilseeds podcast. I'm Philip Dolber and I'm the Knowledge Exchange Manager for the South West. Since the last episode, harvest has largely been completed, though rather prolonged in the South West. Spring barley has only just been completed and there are still pockets of linseed to be taken. Also, those trying soya are still in the middle of harvesting that. The knock-on effect has been delayed drilling with difficult wet soils. Despite this, crops that have been drilled and emerged are looking reasonably well, though needing lots of protection against an array of slugs that are relishing the conditions. This month we're focusing on soils. We've got news of an AHTB initiative to measure soil health. Jack Smith from our Leicester Monitor Farm, growers putting research into practice, and our usual update from the Market Intelligence team. Soils are, quite frankly, miraculous, but, being complex, can be difficult to manage. One key challenge is to know what a healthy soil looks like, so land can be worked with that in mind. Here's Jason Pohl with details of an initiative which will dig deep and produce ways to measure soil health.
A healthy soil optimises the physical, chemical and biological properties of soil. AHTB has researched all three areas in recent years, and the former two are now relatively well understood, but biological properties remain fairly mysterious. Working with other AHTB sectors and the British Beet Research Organisation, £1 million has now been invested in a five-year soil biology and soil health partnership to unlock the secrets of the earth. Comprising eight scientific partners and six industry partners, the partnership has a robust practical and scientific foundation, but it needs to work with you to create practical soil health tools and guidance. The first opportunity to get involved is in November at two soil health workshops taking place in Northumberland on the 13th and Gloucestershire on the 15th. At the events, current understanding of soil health and how it can be measured and managed will be outlined. Participants will also be invited to take place in a lively discussion to identify the key challenges facing soil health. For details, including booking information, visit ahdb.org.uk/greatsoils. One soil indicator, which has been used since 1984, is wheat boll fly egg numbers. Each autumn, we fund ADAS to count eggs in soil samples from sites in the east and the north of England. Counts from the sites sampled so far this season indicate it is likely to be a relatively low-risk year for this pest, the threat a little higher in the north. With recent losses of authorisations for egg hatch and dead heart sprays, the continued relatively low pressure is welcome news. The current seed treatment threshold recommendations, based on drilling date and egg counts, are as follows. Winter wheat crops, sown before November, are unlikely to benefit from a seed treatment, as they have more time to tiller and are better able to withstand attack. For crops sown between November and December, seed treatments should be considered where there are more than 100 eggs per metre squared. For crops sown between January and March, seed treatments should be considered irrespective of the wheat boll fly population size. For survey results and other information on this pest, head to cereals.ahdb.org.uk/WBF.
Next up, Jack Smith is the farm manager at Stoughton Estate near Leicester. He's been hosting an AHTB monitor farm for a year now, with some of the best meetings focusing on soil management. Also, dairy cattle have been introduced to the farm in the last 12 months, bringing some changes with them. Here's Jack talking to our communications executive, Eleanor Holdsworth, about his harvest, the cows, and what he's learned so far.
So I wanted to ask first about this year's harvest. You reduced your arable cropping slightly, and that would let you reduce your sprayer and combine needs. So you did it? Did it have a kind of positive impact?
Yeah, that's worked. We're now, more matched. The machinery we have is better matched to the area that we do. Everyone's aiming to get optimum machinery mix, but actually what is the optimum machinery mix? Do you have a bit of spare capacity? Do you have no spare capacity? Be right on your limit, but that's a difficult one to do. So I'd say now one sprayer on 3,000 acres is about right. Combine-wise, it depends on the size of your combine. We've gone slightly smaller. We're now down to a 35-foot header rather than a 40-foot header, but that seems to have matched quite well. It's then trying to match tractors, but that has worked.
And did it work in this harvest with all the stop start?
Yeah, well, we finished wheat reasonably well on the 25th of August, so that's quite early. But in turn, once spring crops didn't get finished till the Monday the 18th of September, so we were then sort of 3 weeks in spring crops, which we always sort of knew we'd do. because Wincup said to hang on that bit more. I think as well as the area, where our copy mix is now a bit different, whereas 5 years ago it was wheat and rape, so everything wanted to be combined in August. Now we've got barley and spring crops, so yeah. Now we're going from mid-July till mid-September, so we've stretched that gap as well, which has enabled us to make more of the combines again. The grass introduction has done two things for the rotation. Well, it's helped the rotation in terms of growing different crops, but it's also helped the machinery mix.
What's it like for you as a farm manager having animals around the farm now? Has it changed the feel of the farm?
It's two quite separate sites. Obviously, this is the arable unit all operates out of this farm, and then the dairy unit is all out of us, quite a separate farm. And the grass, because of the way the farm is set up, we were able to almost ring fence the grazing platform as well. So that didn't impact quite so much. But it looks right. And that's a stupid thing to say, but if you go and park on the top of the estate, on the top of the hill, and look down and you can see the swathe of grass through the middle of the estate, and then the arable crops interspersed and around the outside, it looks right. You know, Leicestershire is a mixed farming area, and actually having grass in the estate, it's a stupid thing to say, really, it looks right, but it is right for the land type.
What would you have said was the highlight of the Monitor Farm programme last year for you?
Building the numbers and meeting the neighbours.
Which were the speakers who worked really well?
One of the best chaps was the organic chap, John Pawsey. He was very good because he challenged convention. We had a soils chap called Ian Robertson. He was very good. Again, wasn't trying to sell something.
What did you learn from both of those?
I mean, the organic chap is just trying to challenge the reliance on ag chem, alternatives to ag chem. And just challenging convention from John and how you can do it differently. But also that they have many of the same struggles. Ian Robertson is very good, just sort of talking about soils and soil management. Soils and soil management is very buzz, isn't it? It's very in. It's true. I'm glad we're looking at it, just trying to think. I always try and take one or two things from each meeting. You can't do everything that everybody talks about, but if you can take one or two things from each meeting to take away and look into a bit more.
And so from John Pawsey's meeting, what were the one or two things that you took away to try and look at?
It was the they have to get very clever with their rotations. In organic farming, they utilise rotations a lot better. So I would say rotation management. His approach to blackgrass control as well, because he's got blackgrass in an organic situation and he's managing to control it, mainly through winter and spring cropping and fallows. So if you fast forward to the ominous threat of glyphosate, like what do you do without glyphosate in a blackgrass situation? There's things you can do, but it means it's a complete change in system, i.e. not cropping. But if you don't crop, you have two things about your fixed costs. But yeah, it would be his rotation management and the ability to control blackgrass without chemicals.
And what about Ian Robertson?
Yeah, it'd be the soil testing and paying attention to root, the root structure, as opposed, basically what's below ground as opposed to just what's above ground. I'm not saying you necessarily come out of the meeting having the answers. Come out of the meeting having thought, right, I need to look more into that. You know, and actually he's talking a lot of sense. And that's probably rolled on because from that we're going to look again. One of the meetings this coming year is on soil and tissue testing and getting that side of it a bit more accurate. We spend a lot of money on fertiliser, both P and K, and he sort of challenging what do we actually need to spend rather than always putting the book figure on, trying to drill that down and see if we can spend that money better, which is a big part of what we're trying to do with muck here, I would say. Trying to rely less on what's coming out of the bag and do more with muck, basically.
So have you managed to reduce your fertiliser spend this year with the muck from the cows?
Yes. Not much in nitrogen terms, but quite a lot in P and K terms. And that's not just from muck from cows. We've used a lot of sludge over the last years, and that's probably important. Like the muck from the cattle is going to help, but we were already on that route. And the other chap who came and talked to us was a chap, Clive Bailey. He was just talking about a real situation, and his experience is that actually he was improving his soil indices, his nutrient indices, not through putting on more fertilizer, but by improving his soil structure.
Yeah.
So by improving his soil structure, it was making the nutrients more available, i.e. the nutrients were in there, but in compacted, low aerated soils or poorly aerated soils, the roots couldn't access them. Soil that had got a lot more life in it, the roots could get through it and get to those nutrients, which again rang very true with myself. So rather than actually trying to put bags and bags and bags of P&K fertilizer on, actually what I need to do is improve the way the land's lying to get that side of things. Most people find you get more from people who can relate to what you're trying to do.
In a quest to sift the good decision from the bad, many farmers have released their inner researcher to produce on-farm evidence ahead of a change in practice. Here's Jason again with a few examples of growers putting research into practice.
The launch of the first AHDB strategic farm for arable growers will take place in Suffolk on the 1st of November. At the launch, AHDB and the host farmer, Brian Barker, will reveal plans for a series of trials and demonstrations at the new Strategic Farm East, located near Stowmarket. Information on the wider ambition of the Strategic Farm programme will also be revealed, including plans to add two more arable farms to the network. Since the announcement of the Strategic Farm in June, the local steering group has considered industry needs, along with potential on-farm innovations arising from research and knowledge gaps identified during monitor farm meetings. This information has been used to determine several initial questions which will be considered at the strategic farm. These are: how is soil quality affected by rotations? How can nutrient management be manipulated to boost early crop biomass? How can varietal resistance be deployed best? How do late season nutrition applications affect protein and seed quality? And how can flowering strips be used to boost beneficial insects? The event will look at why these questions were selected and provide details of the practical and research-inspired approaches the farm will take to try and answer them. In addition to outlining the first trial protocols, baseline information on the status of each of the fields in trial will be revealed. People interested in attending should book via cereals.ahdb.org.uk/strategic farm. Meanwhile, in a project funded by AHDB Horticulture, three forward-thinking arable and horticultural farmers who each grow different crops in a shared rented land rotation are pioneering a collaborative approach to improve the long-term health of their soils. Jepco, Loveton Estates and Worth Farms have introduced cover crops into their shared rotations to improve organic matter and soil health. Success of the partnership is being measured through the impact on yields and quality of their cash crops, sugar beet, potatoes and lettuce. The collaboration is part of the AHDB Great Soils programme, and early anecdotal feedback indicates the farmer-led trial is already starting to reap rewards. For example, lettuce yields were up almost 8% compared to soils left bare over the winter. Initially running from summer 2016 to summer 2017, the businesses have now agreed to work together over the longer term. Further details on the research can be found via ahdb.org.uk/greatsoils.
And finally, over the past month, UK feed wheat futures, November 17, for this November, have been trading around £140 per tonne, and are the highest November prices for this stage in the season since 2013. In contrast, global benchmark futures remain low in the historical content. Helen Plant looks at what's behind these trends and what to watch over for the coming weeks and months.
UK feed wheat futures for this November have been trading at around £140 per tonne over the past month or so. This is around £15 to £20 per tonne higher than the November 16 contract was a year ago. And it's also the highest November prices have been for this stage in the season since 2013. In contrast, global benchmark futures are only slightly higher than a year ago and still low in a historical context. For example, the nearby Chicago maize futures price is just $5 per tonne higher than a year ago. So what's behind these movements? Firstly, from a global perspective, it's expected that total grain production will exceed demand for a fifth consecutive season in 2017-18. If confirmed, this would be the first time in recent history that five consecutive seasons of surplus have been recorded. However, the margin of surplus is expected to be much lower than in recent seasons. Contributing to this has been the challenging weather in Canada, parts of the US and Australia. So the smaller margin for error has been supporting global prices relative to last year, but price gains have been limited by the high global grain supplies, including a record Russian wheat crop. Meanwhile, in the UK, wheat supplies look like they will remain relatively tight again this season. This is something Brenda discussed in her recent video, which you can see online. In addition, despite deciding a partial recovery recently, sterling remains much weaker against the euro than in late September 2016. Both of these factors are supporting UK ex-farm wheat prices relative to global levels. It's worth noting that prices for full-spec bread wheat have recorded larger gains than those for feed wheat, reflecting domestic quality this year. Results analysed by the end of August show high protein contents, but lower Hagberg falling numbers due to the impact of untimely rain during harvest. Looking ahead now, and the next areas to watch include greater clarity on the Northern Hemisphere crop sizes, including the size of the influential US maize crop, The first estimates of UK wheat and barley supply and demand from AHDB on the 10th of October, plus planting of maize crops in South America. Planting is now just about getting underway, but there are early concerns about wet conditions in parts of Argentina and drier than ideal conditions in parts of Brazil. The outlook for the 2017-18 season and beyond will be covered at this year's Grain Market Outlook Conference, which will take place in London on the 11th of October. In the meantime, keep up to date with the latest information on our website and follow us on Twitter using the hashtag AHDBMarkets.
The winter meeting season is fast approaching, so make sure you've got these dates in your diary. We've got the Grain Market Outlook Conference in London on Wednesday the 11th of October, the Strategic Farm Launch in Suffolk on the 1st of November, and the Agronomist Conference in Peterborough on the 5th and 6th of December. That's all from us. I'm Philip Dolbear, and you've been listening to the AHDB Cereals and Oilseeds podcast. Tune in again in a month's time for the next episode. Don't forget to let us know what you think by emailing comms@ahdb.org.uk. Visit our website, cereals.ahdb.org.uk, for more information, or follow us on Twitter at @ahdb_cereals.
Soundtrack files were created by Cerulus, Rutger Miller, Barrel Carb, Growing Up, Digifish, and Dividio Guy via Freesound. Additional music was created by Eleanor Holdsworth and Jason Pohl.